David Hawkins is senior editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call and author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. He's covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995. David Hawkins, we love you and we're so glad you're back with us. You know so much about what goes on in Washington, and nobody is more appropriate for the Congressional Corner than you are.
Wow, that's a nice setup. Thank you.
Well, setup is right. Okay, so now we'll start on the Democratic side, the presidential race. What do you got? Bring it.
Well, I am even right before you and I got on the phone, I was talking with my editor about when is it time to write the piece that says Bernie Sanders has a life after running for president in the Senate and would actually be a kind of a powerful player in the Senate. And we concluded that I'm not quite ready to write that.
Interesting. And you're not quite ready to write it because
He's still in it. He's running out of his string. I mean, he still has some chance to, he's still building up delegates. I mean, it's not a mathematical certainty that he's out of it yet. The amount of suspense that attends to Secretary Clinton in Washington remains high. There's sort of a built-in level of, you know, what will happen next, what shoe will next drop, and when will it drop? They always seem to drop these shoes around the Clintons, and sooner or later something will happen that could give Bernie Sanders even more juice than he's already got.
Is there any credence to the indictment theory over the emails?
I don't pretend to know, to be honest. I mean, I think that clearly the FBI is continuing to look at this. That's last week's stories about the FBI granting immunity to the IT guy who actually set up the email server in the house in Chappaqua suggests that they're not just walking away from this. You don't know. Nobody that I know. No reporter is plugged in enough to really say for sure whether what's going to happen or where this is going to lead. You've got to assume that if it's going to lead somewhere, it would lead somewhere before the election. But how much before the election, I don't think anybody knows.
There is always the sense that if something terrible happened to Hillary in terms of an indictment or something like that, there would have to be a substitute and a last-minute substitute. There is a question then whether it would be Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden.
I think that's right. I think Bernie Sanders would obviously, you know, he'd have a strong case to make that he's actually been tested, that he's got a movement behind him, that he has shown, you know, remarkable perseverance and fortitude and staying power, much more so than, you know, to be honest, than I would have expected and that many people expected. But it's also the case that the movement that he is leading has not shown yet the ability to really grow beyond, you know, grow into the non-white community, grow into the older community, grow into constituencies that would be important in a general election, Latinos, blacks, older people, and that Joe Biden has that, and that Joe Biden would be, you know, on paper anyway, would be the ideal stand-in.
I want to go back to something you said about the Senate and Bernie Sanders in the Senate. How has Sanders functioned in the Senate? Has he been effective?
He has not been, to be honest, a sustained power player in the Senate. He has had some moments where he's gotten some things done, and he is correct when he says at debates and rallies and things that he was the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee when the big scandal over terrible VA health care cracked open a couple of years ago, and he did work with a relatively conservative Republican who was the chairman of the same committee on the House side to get a big piece of legislation done that was sort of one of the larger bipartisan accomplishments of a pretty partisan Congress last time. But that was the exception, not the rule. Generally, he has stood kind of on the sidelines. He's been a rhetorical force for his point of view, which is to the left of the Democratic mainstream. He is not a clubby guy. He is not a member of sort of the Senate inner circle, not a glad hander, kind of keeps to himself in the Senate, doesn't do a lot of schmoozing and courting of colleagues to try and get things done all that often. That having been said, when I said a few minutes ago that we're talking about what would his life be in the Senate if he were compelled to return there, he would have a much bigger role in the Senate next year because he is the top Democrat member on the Democratic side. Of course, he still calls himself an independent, but has the top Democratic chair on the Senate Budget Committee. If the Senate goes Democratic again, he would be the chairman of the Budget Committee, which would give him considerable influence whether or not there's a Republican president or a Democratic president. Obviously, the roles would be different, but either way, he would become a big-time spokesman for the Democrats on fiscal policy.
Very interesting. We get more mail here about the superdelegates than anything else. It's often from people who think there's a grand conspiracy. So very quickly, in a sentence, give us what the superdelegates are. And number two, whether or not, if Bernie got the most votes, the superdelegates would still vote for Hillary.
Great questions. The superdelegates are elected and appointed Democratic Party officials, governors, mayors, senators, House members, in some cases other statewide elected officials. So party machas who get to be delegates, by unpledged delegates, just by virtue of their positions as Democratic leaders. And they are not bound the way other delegates are who are elected in the primaries and caucuses. And they can vote for whomever they want. And the second part of your question is, if Bernie gets the most votes, would some of them switch? Right now, Hillary Clinton has an overwhelming lead among the superdelegates. Doesn't do it justice. It's something like, 12, 13 to 1 delegate and superdelegates, lead in superdelegates. I would say that Bernie Sanders would have to kick it into high gear fast in order to... for some of these superdelegates to switch. That did happen 8 years ago. Hillary had the solid lead in superdelegates at the start of the primary and caucus season 8 years ago, and when Barack Obama won the Iowa caucuses and almost won New Hampshire and started to, essentially make it a true one of the great two-person party races of all times, a bunch of the superdelegates switched. So that could happen again, but it would take a major groundswell in favor of Sanders.
So I have a question for you. We only have a minute and a half. How come the Bernieites seem to be angrier in general, mail, calls, than the Hillaryites?
Wow. In a basic sense, this is horrific to hear for Bernieites, but the Bernieites and the Trumpites are angry about a lot of the same things. And they're angry that they feel like, the power elite in Washington has done them wrong, hasn't listened to them, hasn't heard their concerns, is more concerned with the big players than the little guy. So in that sense, people who are for Bernie and for Trump are angry in a similar way. People who are with Hillary are, to oversimplify only somewhat, are more inclined to approve of the Democratic status quo. They approve of Obama. They think he hasn't been a disappointment the way some very liberal voters think that Obama has been a disappointment. Hillary Clinton is, of course, more or less running on the Obama coattails. She doesn't talk about that so much anymore, but she is ideologically positioned pretty close to Obama. And so if you're happy with the way this Democratic administration has gone, you're likelier to be with Hillary Clinton than with Bernie Sanders.
It's always great to have David Hawkins with us. David Hawkins is the senior editor of CQ Roll Call and an amazing man in that he is our guy who watches it all.